sweat technique.
Informed opinions are oftentimes presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brennan.
All right, what's a better skill position group? I was curious about this because Judy Batista of NFL.com says the Texans didn't do much for Stroud, which I disagree with. You re-signed Laramie Tunsil, locked him up long-term. Kenyon Green still is Kenyon Green. We'll see what he does. You drafted a couple of players that are going to, you know, be battling it out for the center job. I think Juice is going to be the favorite there. You traded for Shaq Mason. You signed Dalton Schultz. You drafted, you used a third-round pick on a Tank Dell. You signed Devin Singletary in free agency. You signed Robert Woods, and you brought in, was it Noah Brown, the guy from Dallas? Noah Brown? So, like, I think that the Texans did about as good as they could do for C.J. Stroud. Like, you didn't bring in a wide receiver, one. I don't think you had the ability to. You traded your first-round pick to trade up for Will Anderson. You couldn't draft a receiver at 12 because you traded that pick. You know, you had the chance to sign in DeAndre Hopkins. I was reading today the Texans have like $12, $13 million of cap space, but all of that's designated for Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. So it's kind of like fuzzy math. You really don't have a lot of cap space. So I disagree with Judy Batista saying that the Texans didn't do much for Stroud. I think they did a lot for Stroud. It just wasn't anything that was necessarily like splashy, right, or sexy. It
wasn't the big sexy, you know, swing for the fence move that a lot of people already think it's time for. But they've done more than enough. I mean, we talked about the difference between trying to give Davis Mills every chance to succeed and then ramping it up a notch to do what they did to try and get C.J. Stroud off on the right foot. I think they've done fine, and they've done more than you know, a lot of people may have even expected. So I think the Schultz signing was very unexpected, but very pleasantly so, and people were pleased. Woods, whether he's got something left or not, we'll see.
Right.
But overall, I think that he's got enough weapons to work with. And the biggest thing was they enhanced their offensive line. And if you off, that's, we saw the Carr era here and how just hard to take it was, the way it started, the way it ended because of how it started, and how shell-shocked he was by getting crushed all the time, to where I just think that they've done more than enough to give him everything he's going to need in year one.
Here's the question that I have for you. Are the Texans' skill position players better than what is literally available to every NFL team right now? Now, you go offensive line, Texans' offensive line is way better than any remaining free agent, but if you go skill position players alone, I think we have a conversation. Let's start at running back. Damian Pierce for the Houston Texans. The best free agent running back right now is Dalvin Cook.
Yep, he is.
Dalvin Cook's a better football player now than Damian Pierce.
Look, like, I know there's potential with Damian Pierce. Dalvin Cook is established, and he's still, I think, in the top stages of his game. I think Dalvin Cook, no disrespect, but Dalvin Cook is the winner there.
This might be the last year where Dalvin Cook's better than Damian Pierce, but Dalvin Cook's better than Damian Pierce today. Like, long-term, dynasty, fantasy teams, whatever, I'm going Damian Pierce over Dalvin Cook. But in terms of, like, production, the NFL level this year, I think it's Dalvin Cook. Running back number two, Devin Singletary for the Texans. The RB2 for the free agent team, you have your option here. You have Zeke, you have Kareem Hunt, you have Leonard Fournette.
Well, I mean, I'm going to skip Zeke and Fournette, and I'm going to tell you that right now you can't skip on Kareem Hunt.
You go Kareem Hunt of those three.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt still, is, I think, has enough left in the tank and was effective last year, and especially when he was sharing carries, so he's going to be in the similar situation. I think Kareem Hunt is better than Singletary.
That one's tough for me. That one's
receiving
tough for me.
Wise, I think Singletary has an advantage.
This one's tough for me. This one I was probably going to give a wash, and I would go Kareem Hunt over the other two as well. From, like, you know, being a little bit more dynamic, I think Fournette and Zeke still have a place in this league as, like, a goal line back. Either guy accept that role, I'm not so sure, and I don't think they're going to get paid a whole lot of money for that either. Singletary's a little younger. Hunt, like, it's hard to know what Hunt was because he was behind Nick Chubb, who's one of the best running backs in the NFL.
Right.
So this one's kind of a wash for me. Let's go wide receiver one. Who is the Texans wide receiver one? Let's start there.
Robert Woods?
Okay, let's go Robert Woods. We both said it at the same time. Robert Woods or DeAndre Hopkins? That's easy.
It's a no-brainer. It's DeAndre Hopkins. Even with people putting the rumors out there, DeAndre might be washed. Even at washed, in terms of his ability to high point and catch footballs with those hands, I think he's better than Robert Woods.
He's better than Robert Woods.
Yes. I don't know that we need to spend much more time on it because no matter what stage he's at in his career, and or Woods, it doesn't matter. It's DeAndre Hopkins.
Hopkins, if you like prorate his entire year, last year was over 100 catches. Like, he missed games because of suspension, but if you gave him the full year, he would have been over 100 catches. Receiver two. Let's just say it's John Metchie, because you spent more draft capital on Metchie than any of the other guys. John Metchie, your receiver two. Free agent receiver two is Jarvis Landry.
Who's long in the tooth.
Yeah. See, this one I'd probably go Metchie.
I think Metchie as well.
I go Metchie here. Now, it's a little tough here because we might be...
Experience
maybe
versus
homering a little bit because we haven't seen Metchie on an potential NFL field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Metchie, I think, if I had to bet on one of those guys having a good season, I would bet on John Metchie easily. No doubt about it.
Because I think career-wise, we don't know what Mechie's going to be, but you would love John Metchie to be Jarvis Landry.
I would take that.
Oh, my
if
God,
Metchie
I would
had
take
Jarvis
that.
Landry's career, oh, I would absolutely
would
take
love
that.
It.
But I don't think, like, there's a decent chance that Jarvis Landry catches 10 passes this year in the NFL.
If anybody picks him up.
Right. Like, 10, like if you're in Vegas right now setting the over-under on Jarvis Landry receptions, I might put it at 10. I might put it at 10. For whereas John Metchie, I'm probably putting it around 35, 40.
I'm trying to think like of a situation where it makes sense for him where he could actually
injury.
Fit in and play.
Injury somewhere.
Or Buffalo because he's played in cold weather.
Buffalo likes their guys, though.
They do.
Like,
but I'm just saying,
maybe
if you
an
need
injury
a possession
in Buffalo.
Receiver.
Injury in Buffalo.
Diggs didn't show up yesterday, and now it's a big deal in Buffalo.
Yeah.
But
McDermott's apparently really worried, he said.
Well, the agent said he was there.
I know. It's weird.
Great communication.
Yeah. Well, I mean, went into practice. That was clear.
Right.
He went into practice. So I'll give Metchie the edge there. Receiver three, I'll let you pick between Tank Dell, Nico Collins, and Xavier Hutchinson. The receiver three in free agency is Kenny Golladay. So I'm probably going Texans receiver over Kenny Golladay. Kenny Galladay's not been good recently.
Not recently. Not once he got paid.
Yeah.
He got paid by the Giants and then just completely decided to turn it off. Experience and when Galladay's good, he can catch a football and he could do a lot of good things, but you know, how much does he have left?
I would go the Texans third receiver over Kenny Golladay. I'm not a Kenny Golladay believer.
I don't know that I could put Nico Collins above Kenny Golladay.
I'll put Tank there. He's third round pick.
I could put Tank Dell over him.
And then tight end's easy. Like, Dalton Schultz is far better. Like, I had a tough time coming up with the best free agent tight end.
Yeah.
It was
they did well there.
Maybe Mykal Pruitt, like former, I think he played with the Texans I think he had a cup of coffee with the Texans. Like, the remaining tight ends are dreadful.
Win Texans.
The easy Texans win there. But this is kind of a state of where the Texans are. Like, I like Pierce. I think Pierce has a bright future. I like Singletary as a running back number two. They have some, like, boom or bust young receivers. Metchie, I think, is boom or bust at this point. Tank Dell, a third-round receiver, I think, is boom or bust at this point. You might even throw Nico into that mix. People are high on Xavier Hutchinson as a six-round draft pick. Is it fair to be high on a six-round draft pick before he's ever played in an NFL game? I don't know. But the Texans' skill position players are arguably worse than the best free agent skill position players.
I mean, it's a fair statement to make.
The free agents are, like, higher in terms of, like Dalvin Cook, DeAndre Hopkins, no doubter. After that, it's kind of like a bunch of old dudes that no one really wants. Texans are probably deeper, but they're not as good up top.
It's basically youth versus experience. Like, I think in a lot of ways, you've got younger guys on the Texans that, in the case of Dalton Schultz, he's proven himself. He's looking for another deal, but he's still got a ton that you don't know how high a ceiling can be to where, like you said, with a tight end, there's really no one else out there, so they win that one. But with some of the other receivers, it's like their resume stacks up really, really well.
Uh-huh.
But you're not, as I always say with free agency, you're paying for what they've done, not what they're going to do for you. And I think what they're going to do for you as opposed to what these young guys are going to do for the Texans, I think, have the advantage.
Yeah, yeah. More depth there for sure. DeAndre Dalvin, I think, are the best two players of those pools, which is kind of an interesting way to look at it.
I think Hunt is in there, too, as your secondary running back.
Yeah, see, we probably disagree there. Like, I'd rather have Singletary than Hunt.
See, where I would differentiate is I think Singletary doesn't have any team in this league where he would be running back one. I think there are teams in this league where Kareem Hunt would still be running back one.
I dare you to name it.
Tampa Bay for one.
I like Rashad White.
Okay, but I think Tampa Bay, at least short term, I think there's one.
I like White. I'm actually a little bullish on him. I think he's got a chance to be pretty good.
Maybe he has a chance to be pretty good down the line, but I think Tampa Bay, you know, losing Fournette and kind of pressing the reset button, I think Kareem Hunt, you know.
But there's kind of a reason that they were willing to move on from him, though, because they like the young guy.
Maybe.
713-780 ESPN. Do you think the Texans were, in hindsight, like the J.J. Watt news came out yesterday, I saw some crazy takes out there. We'll get to those Thursday in Bad Take Boulevard. Do you think the Texans were right in hindsight to release J.J. Watt instead of like holding firm and trading him for a fourth?
I mean, I don't say I want to say I definitively know more, but I have talked to enough people that the situation to me was more of the Texans not wanting. They were worried about the imaging, and they were worried about how it would look if a guy that's given so much to the franchise, but more so has done so much for the city, if they were the ones that were blamed for getting rid of him and having to cut him. And I think that it came down to a kind of a handshake, wink, wink, of we won't trade you somewhere you probably don't want to go for a draft pick if you don't crush us in the process and say we wanted to get rid of you or we weren't going to bring you back, and we'll just mutually agree to see each other down the road, and it'll be a win-win. And so that's I think that's how the situation in my mind makes sense, how it all went down.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think that it was a crossroads. JJ still wanted to see if there was a place where he could actually win, didn't want to go through a rebuild anyway, and he was making a boat ton of money. So it was the right thing for both sides.
At the moment, like in the moment, I was on the side of like trade him for a fourth. Like don't do what's right for JJ. Like you don't owe it to JJ. Like you need to do what's right for your team. In hindsight, I feel like I was a little callous there. I feel like I was a little cold there. I'm good with the way the Texans handled it in hindsight. And like the culture of the Texans was really bad at the time, so I didn't trust anything that they were doing. But like fourth round pick, like would I have liked to have that? Sure. Is it better than the long term ramifications and good relationship with JJ Watt? Not that that's anything actually like tangible, but it's good to have. I think the Texans did fine in hindsight.
And we've also seen it sour real quick. Like, that's the thing that makes a difference then when guys want to come back or don't come back.
Right.
And a lot of guys hold a lot of ill will if a team treated them wrong on the way out, no matter how many good years they had together. And I think you avoided that. You saw that. JJ was always Texans in the back of his mind. Always Houston, you know, in the middle, in the front, forefront of everything that he was saying, no matter where he was in Arizona in his career. And this was an easy, quick remarriage to where he is always going to be, you know, a Texan. And that's fantastic. That's what you want. You don't want dreams 1 year in Toronto or Emmitt Smith's in Arizona. And I watched them when they got rid of Brett Favre, you know, create more turmoil and toxic situation than you ever would have expected about a guy that was the best quarterback in franchise history.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I have to admit, I was wrong about something. I'll tell you what it was and what it is and all of that next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No stalking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. I'm not wrong often. People are laughing as they listen to this. I was wrong about one thing. I thought that the Astros would be fine without a general manager for a few months. Boy, was I wrong. I saw Robert Land talk about this on Twitter. He has a podcast covering all Houston sports.
The old camera guy?
Yeah.
He worked for me for a while.
Yeah, that Robert Land.
Yep.
But he was praising James Click, which, hey, James Click's done a lot of good for the Houston Astros. Sure. Mauricio Dubon. Who did the Astros trade for Mauricio Dubon?
Breggy's buddy,
Breggy's caddy. Yeah. He probably has the secret ingredient on that bad Bregman salsa. I mean, he's nothing. I think he appeared in like three big league games. He was nothing for the Astros, who have Yiner, who have Corey Lee, who have, I mean, Salazar's probably better than Paparizki. And that's who they traded to get Dubon. The Astros got Phil Maton, who's been one of their best relievers this year, and Yiner Diaz, who we all want to play more, for Miles Straw. And like, Miles Straw's okay. Miles Straw is like a gold glove caliber center fielder, but can't really hit. Like, you can argue Miles Straw, Chaz McCormick, Jake Myers. Like, they're all probably, I mean, I think Chaz and Jake are better. I'll listen to a Miles Straw defense. Maybe he's in the same tier. I would disagree, but I can understand the argument. He re-signed Yordan Alvarez to an incredibly team-friendly deal. I know that we mock Rafael Montero now, which, fair. I mean, he makes one of the highest annual salaries for a reliever, and you also gave him 3 years when you probably could have signed him for $15 million for one or $12.5 million for one. He traded He got him for nothing. Like he was a throw in the Kendall Graveman trade that was centered around Abraham Toro. Like Smith was a throw in. Yep. Smith was a throw in because his ERA was. And they traded bad relievers.
Yep.
Joe Smith and Rafael Montero. So we look back and like, I think Click does deserve a lot of praise. But this is more about like the 3 months that the Astros weren't operating without a general manager. Because like, fine, like you're the owner of the team. You're Jim Crane. If you want to move on for James Click because it's in the betterment of your organization long term, that's fine. But in hindsight, and look, I was wrong with this. They should not have let the vehicle continue to move without an actual driver at the wheel. And we're seeing it in hindsight. And look, it's hindsight. We talked about it a lot. But you see it with Abreu, who's been hot in June to a 700 OPS. Rafael Montero, where I've defended Rafael Montero, still not a good contract. I still think he's going to be fine, but not a good contract. Michael Brantley hasn't swung the bat at the Major League Baseball level at all.
And played, period.
The Astros should – and look, I don't think any of this is like going to damage the franchise or like shut the window, but it's made you a lesser team in 2023. I think it's fair to say that to a conclusion already.
Yeah, it's when you make the comparison, there's a lot to be said about whether they got along, communicated well, or Crane liked Click. That's a side conversation and probably at the crux of why Click was let go or his contract wasn't renewed. But you can't argue with the fact that whether it turned out or not, the fact that you went out and got Vasquez and you got the guy Trey Mancini when you needed, whether they were insurance policies or they were expected more and they just didn't perform. The fact is, he made moves that got you quality major league players over their careers that were there in case you needed them. The year before, when he got Yimi Garcia, mm-hmm. as well as Maton, as well as the Seattle trade, when you look at it, he got three teams closers at a time when you needed bullpen help, and it helped get you all the way to a World Series, though you didn't win it. Okay, so he made moves, and the Yordan is so underrated in terms of what you signed him for.
Yeah.
But the fact that you came out of that, and because you knew a lot of people were looking, a lot of people like Keith Law and others were actually pointing fingers about the Astros making a massive mistake and how dumb this was, and almost with machismo and an ego involved in it, said, look at me, right from the jump, this is what we're going to do to show you how wrong you are. And you look at the other name that was kicked around when it was Abreu, and it was Rizzo.
Yeah, see, I don't put a whole lot of stock in Rizzo because I think Rizzo was playing the game to get brought back by the Yankees.
I think Rizzo made the personal choice that he liked New York and wanted to go back
there. I'm not even sure the Astros were really in on Rizzo.
But I think that if you look at first basemen that were available other than Abreu, he was younger. He still had more left in the tank.
Yeah.
He's performing better.
Better free agent pickup.
The Montero thing to me was the first head. That was the first move they made, and there was a massive head scratcher. I didn't mind the Brantley move at the time. But I also was believing what I was being told, which is they don't see any problems. Bagwell, even right before the start of spring training, basically said, we expect him to be ready for opening day.
Yeah.
I believed what I was hearing. And so then I'm like, so there's nothing to be concerned about. But the fact that whether it's your team physicians, your medical personnel, or something somewhere didn't send a red flag that, look, it's not, there's a really good chance this guy's not going to be ready. And now he still hasn't played. That's all they did in offseason for the most part. And if that's all you have to base it on and judge it on, it was a horrible, horrible, horrible thought of not having someone in control as a general manager for any length of time.
That's to me the biggest takeaway. Like, I'm not, in hindsight, mad that they moved on for Click, because I've liked what I've seen from Dana Brown. To be fair, we've not seen a whole lot of Dana Brown. Like, Dana Brown hasn't done a ton. The biggest move that Dana Brown has made is Christian Javier signing him to an extension. But he hasn't signed anybody. Like, he claimed Matt Gage. Who cares? He's just a guy. He hasn't made a trade. So, like, we haven't seen Dana Brown really operate yet. We still have to collect a lot of information from Dana Brown, like who he is as a general manager. I do believe that Dana Brown's going to be good, though. I like Dana Brown. This isn't they should have never fired James Click. But if you're going to do that, you hire Dana Brown the next week.
Right away.
Before you make any moves, before you sign Abreu, before you sign Montero, before you sign Brantley. Like, you're hiring a general manager to take the will of the organization. But before you do that, you're going to take it out on a test drive and, like, bring down the value of the car.
It's two separate conversations in terms of, you know, move Dana Brown, I always said, just like I said with Click, until he made the moves he made, including the first deadline moves when he brought in the three closers. Really, in every general manager in this town, I'm waiting to see your first signature move. The first big move that you have to make that really can tell us a whole lot about how you're going to be and what you're able to do for this team. And we haven't seen enough from Dana Brown to have anything to really judge him on. We know that, you know, Caserio was how you traded Deshaun Watson. We know that it was Click making the moves he made at a couple of trade deadlines. You look at the, and also moving on in tough calls from guys that were very much fan favorites. We haven't seen anything from Dana Brown yet, but the time is ticking. I mean, because we know you're not in first place right now. We know that you don't have this big cushy lead where you can experiment bringing prospects up and see who's ready to play by the time you get ready for the playoffs. You're setting your rotation but resting your starters, doing a whole bunch of things with a six-man rotation. You're looking at it from a whole different perspective this year, and now it's going to be on his shoulders to say, try and fix all the things that we got going wrong right now, starting with who's going to fill in for the guys that are injured. When or if are these guys going to come back? And if not, who do you have on the horizon that both externally and internally are capable of replacing them?
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to make this team as good as it can be, like Click did the last couple of years?
I don't know if that's the fairest way to evaluate Brown, though. Like 2304 kind of to the same vein. He better start putting his fingerprints on the roster. What if every trade that you get offered, though, is a ripoff? Like, they want Yiner Diaz for a fifth starter. Like, whatever. Like, we don't hear about the trades you don't make. So Dana Brown could be making shrewd decision, but doesn't make a trade. We're like, oh, Dana Brown did nothing, when in fact he rejected five awful trades for the organization. So I don't know if that's the fairest way to evaluate a general manager's prowess, is like to grade him on the deadline.
Not just the deadline. I'm just saying his first major move, right? But I think that as it relates...
But if it doesn't happen before August 1st, the city's going to be ticked off.
They're going to be ticked off because you have to be creative in your ways of trying to get things done, too. It might Don't ever take a bad deal for the sake of taking a deal in desperation. You shouldn't be desperate, but there are a multitude of different ways that you should be able to finagle the system or work the system to get what you need. If it's not taking a bad trade, but it's looking at, you know, every potential option for someone that maybe you will get nothing out of after this season, but realizing that there's a way, a means to an end to get someone that can at least fill the gap for the rest of this season to give you the best chance to chase another title. And then you move on. I don't want them to make bad trades.
Right, but that's kind of the point I'm making. Like I, and maybe I'm just kind of like reaching here, because I do feel that Dana Brown's going to make a move or two. Like, it might not be as significant as he's kind of letting on, which kind of worry. Like, if I was advocating for Dana Brown, or I was Dana Brown's agent, or I was Dana Brown's like nephew, I'd be like, hey, Uncle Brown, you know, maybe don't sell high on what you're trying to do. Like, maybe don't tell the city you're going to trade for a bat, because if you don't trade for a bat, the city's going to be really mad at you.
Plus, they're looking for the splashy moves, right?
I don't know if Dana Brown is.
No, I'm not talking about Dana Brown. I'm talking about the fans.
Yeah.
The fans, when you make a statement like that, is thinking big name player.
Right. Like, I mean, I don't know the name to like use from a fan's point of view.
Bieber for a starting pitcher.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, that's a big
name.
They want
Bieber, and instead you get Zach Greinke.
I don't think you get Zach Greinke, but I'm saying.
Why not?
Because I think I think it'd be a lesser name.
That's too popular?
Yeah. Already know Greinke, and you know what he's done in the past, and he's been here before. It would be, I think majority of baseball doesn't understand, like, Detroit's pitcher.
Well, Eduardo Rodriguez is good. Like, they would look up his ERA and be like, okay, I can live with that. And they've seen him in the playoffs. Like, it'd be somebody who's more of a Zach Greinke type without the cachet in Houston. He's just a throw-in, back-of-the-rotation starter. Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head, like, on a bad team.
I'm thinking Pittsburgh.
Like, Paul Blackburn. Paul Blackburn's not going to move the needle at all.
Nothing from anybody. Zach Greinke would, because he's been here and done that, to where at least they go, oh, you're bringing him back? Well, he's been serviceable, but... If you get Bieber, they're thinking Cy Young Bieber, even though the rest of the world is saying velocity down, but still a better than average 4 or 5 starter Bieber.
I mean, he's got a sub 350 ERA, and he's got name value. It's like people would be pleased with that. A lot of times name value is more important than their actual talent.
No question.
Dick Willie's saying, would Sonny Gray move the needle? He would for me, but the Twins are in first place.
Yeah, they're not giving him up, and they got to hang on to that because their record sucks.
Their pitching's good. Well, Sonny Gray, Joe Ryan, like that staff can go.
Yep.
And then they have the mound visits. That's probably why they're pitching so well. It's because Carlos Correa is visiting the mound in Minnesota.
Plus, Vasquez learned so much about the mound visits. Now they double team him.
Not having a good year
at all.
Have you looked at the numbers on that? He's not having a good. I feel bad for Vasquez for that, actually. 713. We just praised Click, and we just looked at Mancini and Vasquez, and they've been terrible. 713-780-3776. They were.
Yep.
They were. 713-780-3776. All right. Will of Bits coming up next. I have no idea what we're doing. Joe's not here. He usually handles this. We'll figure it out. Skiller B's on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's the Wheel of Bits on the Killer Bees.
Kibbles and bits, kibbles and bits. I'm going to get me some kibbles and bits.
Who knows the bits the bees will begrudgingly bite? Well, let's find out.
It's time to call your shot.
Here's Joel and Jeremy. And Joe.
No Joe today. Sean Bates today. Sean, what did he say we're doing? Spence and Siri or whatever?
What's call our... your shot.
All right. Call your shot. I think it's the first time we've called our shot, so this must be one of the first bits. On the, I think we're up to like 24 bits that it could literally be whatever the Will lands on that day, and we're talking about that. What was the one we had twice last week, back to back?
It wasn't start sit.
No, it wasn't that one. It was similar to that though. I can't remember. We have
one must go.
One must go. One must go. We did that back to back days. Yeah. One must go back to back. So we never know where the Will's going to land. Every day 2:30, it's a Will of Bits. Joe, Sean today. They. It's a virtual Will, I guess. I haven't even seen this Will. Joe's probably lying to us.
It's in his dome piece. That's
maybe.
It.
Maybe. But, yeah, they spin the Will. This is the bit today. Call your shot. What are we calling our shot about, Sean Mabes? Did Joe provide you with this information? I certainly hope so.
Yes. Okay, I have a heavily scripted email from...
Say hi to Joe. He's listening right now, hoping this goes well.
Okay. The call your shot today is what tier will Will Anderson... be next year on a list, and he attached a PFF list of the tiers of edge rushers in the NFL.
Oh, okay. I actually did see this list last week, so I know what he's talking about. And I think that Pro Football Focus does this like every year where they have their tiers, and they go like throughout every position throughout the offseason. And I was reading this the other day. There wasn't a Texan on this list, so I see why Joe asked it this way. I think on the first tier of edge rushers, he had like your usual suspects. See what I did there?
Uh-huh.
Like Micah Parsons, TJ Watt, you know, the Bosas, I'm sure were on there.
He's not on that tier yet.
Who's that?
Will Anderson.
Will Anderson's not on any tier.
I'm saying if you had to put him on one.
For next year, you're already saying tier one.
Not this year. Yeah. Call your shot. Which tier is Will Anderson at next year?
This
I think there was five tiers.
Oh.
I think there was five tiers on this list. So it like went through like almost 40 guys. So Will Anderson, this time next year, we're having this conversation June 13th, 2024. Where is Will Anderson? Does he make the list? Is he a top 40 edge rusher? Is he a first-tier edge rusher? Is he a fourth-tier edge rusher?
I'm thinking he's 2-3. I'm thinking on the high end, and the hopeful Texan in me says he's on the second tier. I think that realistically, as he understands and gets to know the NFL and has to mature and fit in and adjust,
mm-hmm.
I think it's more likely he's going to be on the third tier.
I just pulled it up. Here's tier one. There's six in tier one. Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons, the Bosas, TJ Watt, Max Crosby. Tier two, Son Reddick, Rashawn Gary, Green Bay, your guy, Trey Hendrickson, Cincinnati, which he's kind of like a poor man's J.J. Watt,
yep.
Von Miller, Danelle Hunter, who's holding out, by the way, and then Brian Burns of Carolina. Tier three's Khalil Mack, Jalen Phillips, Josh Allen, Montez Sweat, Za'Darius Smith, Matthew Judon, and then your fourth tier is DeMarcus Lawrence, Shaquille Barrett, John Franklin Myers, sounds like a president, Aiden Hutchinson, Danico Autry, Randy Gregory, Chase Young's tier four, that's interesting.
Man.
And then tier five is Sam Hubbard, Josh Sweat, what is it, Greg Rousseau, Brandon Graham, Cameron Jordan, Alex Highsmith. I think it would be disappointing if he's not tier five. If he's not in the same conversation as those guys, that would be a disappointing rookie season.
I almost think their tier four is better than their tier three.
I think their tier four is more, like they have some older guys who have showed flashes, and then Aiden Hutchinson. Like Aiden Hutchinson's really good.
Yeah, and I think Aiden Hutchinson maybe should be up high a little
tier
higher.
Tier three and tier four are very similar.
Yeah. I hope that Will Anderson is in the 3-4 conversation, and we can say he belongs in one, if not the one or the other.
Yeah,
but I think that's on that after his first year, I think that's best case scenario.
I'll take a top 25 defensive end for Will Anderson next year. Like, I think the best one you can compare him to of this list is Aiden Hutchinson. Like Walker didn't make this list.
I don't expect Will Anderson to have Aiden Hutchinson's rookie year.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't expect him to have Hutchinson's rookie year. And Hutchinson, after a year, was 22nd on this list, tier four for what they have.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect
him to
get
that high. If he's 25th in tier four,
they'll take it.
I'll take that rookie year without even knowing
but
the numbers.
But now, how does that translate? You'll take it But how does that make you look at the trade?
You have to see what else you would have lost. Okay. Like, that's only half of the conversation. Right. Like, somebody was asking me that the other day on Twitter. It's like, if C.J. Stroud does this and Will Anderson does this, because I think both guys have to produce for the trade to be successful. Because if C.J. Stroud sucks and Will Anderson's good, well, Will Anderson's fine. He's better than what you got in this, what you gave up in the trade. Well, you drafted C.J. Stroud over Will Anderson. So they both have to be better than what you gave up. And people have been asking me, well, if Stroud does this and Will Anderson does this, does it make you a little happier with the trade? Well, tell me what the other guys are doing. Tell me what I missed at 12, what I missed at 33. Tell me what my record is and what pick I have in the 2024 NFL draft. I need more to the story. I have to look at the complete package.
I think the bigger thing is even more so than obviously it's going to be critical to see what the two picks the Texans took at that high in the draft both do.
Sure.
But the bigger thing is the team production, both sides, wins and loss wise, because I think that if the Texans, you know, have a season that rivals the Browns, or at least they're more like a top 10, 15 pick.
Yeah.
People are going to say they won the trade no matter what.
But even this, we've kind of zeroed in on Marvin Harrison Jr. because, like, the Texans need receiver. Like, that's the kind of, like, receiver one's probably their biggest offensive weakness. And when you have a franchise quarterback and a rookie quarterback, you would like to have that, you know, number one receiver to make his life easier. Like, so we've zeroed in on Marvin Harrison as, like, the potential guy. But let's, like, what about this scenario? And I hate talking about this trade because it's been a while, and I don't want to talk about it for, like, the next 4 years until we can really evaluate it. But what if Will Anderson's mid and Jaxon Smith-Njigba is world-class? Well, you traded the opportunity of drafting Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who is the teammate of C.J. Stroud in college. I know he didn't play his final year. And you drafted a mediocre defensive end. Well, there was your receiver before we even had the 2024 conversation. So, like, there's a lot of variables.
And the other variable I would throw out for you, regardless of what C.J. Stroud looks like in year one,
mm-hmm.
but if you're really bad, you take your lumps and forget Marvin Harrison Jr. for a second, even though if you want to, you know, if it's Stroud's your guy, now you take the other guy, which arguably is the best receiver, and they played together, Stroud and Marvin Harrison Jr. But what if...
Yeah,
it's Caleb Williams, and you have the potential of taking the best quarterback in next year's draft, which is the slam dunk best quarterback.
I just went on a log spill about tell me the entire equation, but if that's the only thing you told me, how is the trade not a failure?
Exactly.
Like
if you had some team that said, I want Caleb Williams so bad,
right.
I'm going to give you a better package than the Bears got, a significantly better package than the Bears got last year. And tell me how that lets you win that trade.
If you told me right now, and you told me nothing else, you told me nothing else at all about the script of the 2023 NFL season, you told me nothing else, but the only thing you told me is that Cleveland has the number one pick, the one that belonged to Houston. What scenario exists where the 2023 season was worth your while, was worth all of that? It doesn't exist. I would challenge anybody to tell me how it did. 713-780-3776. Aiden Hutchinson last year, I think we both landed on like tier four, top 25 this time next year is good for Will Anderson. It's a good start. Aiden Hutchinson had 9.5 sacks, 9 tackles for loss in his rookie year. If Will Anderson got 9.5 sacks, I would be very excited.
Yep.
If Will Anderson got 9 tackles for a loss, I'd be very excited for where he's going in his NFL career.
But I don't see in year one Will Anderson mimicking and or matching Aiden Hutchinson's first year in this league. I thought Aiden Hutchinson did more than even I expected him to do in year one. I don't know. I mean, I want Will Anderson to succeed, and I hope to God he does all those things and more.
Yeah.
I just think with this team in year one, I'm not expecting even that from him.
Yeah, I think he's got a shot. If I had to bet one side of it, I'm going to take the under 9.5 sacks. I think any rookie, I'd probably bet the under on that.
He's got a shot.
Tackles for loss.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. 713-780-ESPN. Tony Lone Star says tier two. I hope you're right, Tony Lone Star. Hope you're
shooting
right.
Shooting for the moon, keeping your feet on the ground.
And you know, whenever you shoot for the moon, even if you fall short, where you land? Amongst the stars.
Reaching.
713. I don't Maybe think that's they did how it that. Goes. Like, if you shoot for the moon, no, you
Casey
fall
Kasem,
short.
Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
Right, but the cliche and the whole little, I don't even know what you call it, and lullaby is if you aim for the moon and you fall short, you're still amongst the stars.
Were you trying I've to heard say of lullaby? That,
right? Lullaby. What did I say?
Lullaby.
Go into the tapes. I don't know. I never sang a lullaby. 713-780-3776. It's Blanker's favorite game. He loves playing this game. Is this guy a Washington National, or is he a Washington Bullet?
Oh, I might have a shot at that.
I think you might have a shot at this. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville making a difference in guys' lives, and he's been doing so for quite a while. I think he's the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what that is, but you're experiencing pattern balding or just flat-out hair loss and you don't think there's anything you can do about it, Doc Linville can help because he has a procedure called the NeoGraft, which is fantastic. And genetically, it takes the hair that you're never going to lose, sides in the back of your head, puts it where you need it most. Maybe it's your hairline or maybe it's that bald spot on top. And the hair is not only going to be planted there, it's going to stay there. It's going to grow with you. It's going to get longer and stronger and be with you for the long haul and make a difference in your appearance on a daily basis. I did the procedure. I was amazed by the results. Almost instantaneously, you can see your hairline return. You can see the follicles. You can see them growing. In 6 to 9 months, you actually can see that the hair has gotten longer and stronger. It's grown. It looks like the exact same as the rest of your hair, and it gives you more confidence. And you feel like, hey, this is the look that I always had that I never thought I could get back, and now I got it again. For you as an ESPN listener, you can get a consultation with Doc Linville and his staff that normally costs $150 for absolutely free. Like I said, no obligation, no cash out of pocket, nothing that you have to sign on the line and say you're going to do something later for. You just go in and talk to the staff. See if it's right for you. Ask all the questions. Get all the answers. Just go to 975hair.com. Sign up for an appointment. Then go in and ask the questions. See if it's right for you by finding out what I did, which was the key cog in why I made the decision. 95%+, and Doc Linville will tell you 95% to 99% of all the follicles moved are going to stay and grow and be with you for the long haul. That's what convinced me, and I am a believer ever since. It's a fantastic procedure. I didn't experience any pain. The recovery time was quick. The results were great. Tell them I sent you by 975hair.com.
Time. Time to play the game.
Welcome back, Houston. It's the Killer Bees. Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It is Hunter Brown on the mound tonight for the Houston Astros. The Astros have their horses going in the series. Hunter Brown tonight, Framber Valdez tomorrow, Christian Javier on Thursday. Hunter Brown 5-3, 3.69, earned run average. Patrick Corbin, who has one of the worst contracts in all of baseball, 4-6 with a 4.89 ERA. The Nationals come in to this series with a 26-38 record. I would have thought they would have been lower at this point of the year. I thought they would have been more than 12 games under 500, but here we are. Here we are. The Astros lineup is out, by the way.
What's wrong with it, Jeremy?
I don't critique Dusty's lineups. I trust Dusty Baker. His everyday lineup.
What are the peeps going to say? Is wrong with Dusty's
Jose
lineup.
Abreu's in it. They'll say that. Okay. They'll say no Yordan, which thanks for the tidbit there. They'll question why Jeremy Pena isn't in the lineup, but Dusty told us that he was sick. I guess he's still sick. That stinks. But here is the Astros lineup. I'll let the listener determine what's wrong with Dusty's lineup. 713-780-3776. Dubon leads it off at short. Altuve's at second. Bregman's at third. Tucker and Wright, Abreu at first. Yiner Diaz. Your DH. And then McCormick in left, Myers in center, Maldonado catches. I have no issue with this lineup.
That's fine.
I mean, I'd rather Payne to not be sick than sick.
Great. I'm glad Kessinger wasn't somewhere roaming the infield.
Yeah, I don't know if I really want to see a whole lot of Gray Kessinger.
I'm good. And you got Yiner's bat in the lineup, and he doesn't, I mean, Mauricio, Maldi at pitchers, I mean, catcher's fine because I think he works well with, he's teaching some things to
Hunter
Brown.
I like him
Brown.
With Brown. I like him with Brown. I mean, Yiner's DHing too, so you can't get too mad at Maldonado catching. This will be the fourth game that Yordan has missed. Mauricio Dubon has started every game since Yordan Alvarez has missed. Now, Pena's been sick the last two, so that kind of throws a wrench into this whole equation. Jose Abreu has also started every game, although that's not a surprise. Yiner Diaz has started three, and now Martin Maldonado has started three. And Jay Myers has started three. So, kind of keeping tabs of some of the part-timers that are playing while Yordan is out. But yeah. Dubon's been the biggest benefactor so far.
Yeah, he has. And I think we talked about it yesterday, the fact that what he's not going to give you in power, he's going to at least try and hold his own average-wise. He's getting you knocks. He's doing some things that he is better than serviceable when he's in the lineup. That's why when he filled in for Altuve and everybody just said you have to find a place for him. Well, have to is strong. That might be too strong. But at the same time, you have a luxury because of his bat that we found this year we haven't seen in the past, that allows Dusty the resource to have a guy that can play multiple positions in the lineup somewhere to give you, you know, more base runners and more opportunities to score runs, which they desperately need with all these guys out.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't coming at the expense of Pena, but it's because Pena's sick.
Yeah, it's not like something like he's got some debilitating injury or something that's going to keep him out like Yordan. Right now, hopefully, he's back in the lineup tomorrow night.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
Somebody said, did I say Yordan in the lineup?
No.
I didn't think so. Okay. Just making sure. We had a texter that said that. Some people were saying what's wrong. Okay, never mind. It was the MLB app, not me. The MLB app tweeted out that Yordan was in the lineup and Altuve was not. Okay. So it wasn't me. What was I going to do here? Oh, yeah, this nine-game stretch for the Astros. We're going to do that. We're going to do that. But this nine-game stretch for the Astros at home. We like to look at things kind of like by pockets, road trips, weekly, homestands. The Astros starting a nine-game homestand tonight. Three for the Nats, three for the Reds, three for the Mets. What do they need to do in these next nine games?
Well, I mean, you're at home, and you haven't played great at home, but you're at home, and you're playing bad teams, and you're going to catch the Mets with at least no Pete Alonso, but a Verlander that struggled with an owner that's trying to stay patient with a lineup that he paid way too much to get the underproduction that he's getting. So you should take advantage. And I think that at home, I would hope that you take two out of three from the Mets, and then I would say that just not to get greedy and look for sweeps in both cases, but out of the nine games, I would expect them to go 6-3.
Give me six wins. I don't care how you do it. I don't care how you do it. Six wins of these next nine. This nine-game homestand, it's your pocket. Give me six wins. It's Star Wars night at Minute Maid. Are you a Star Wars guy?
No.
I'm not a Star Wars guy either. Sean, are you a Star Wars guy?
Star Wars guy?
Seen the movies, not a huge guy.
I'm not a big Star Wars
Joe
guy.
Joe is, right?
It makes sense.
Yeah, Joe's a Star Wars
guy. He likes things that are not real. if I told you that two of the three Wheelhouse hosts were Star Wars guys, which two would you pick? I'm just curious because I kind of thought of it in my head. What do you think, Sean?
Oh, I honestly, I think you could go 0-3 on them being Star Wars guys.
Really? I don't think BK is.
I would
BK
go Jake and Cody. Not. If I went two, I would go Jake and Cody.
I would agree.
Yeah, those would be the guys. Two. Just because of that, so BK, I could see him being like,
yeah.
What's a Star War? Aren't there real wars?
Something, I don't Mandalorian? Know. Is that a Star War?
That's like
the.
That's yeah.
like the, it's like a the spin-off, show, right? Yeah. You got like a helmet? Yeah. Is that Pablo Pasco?
So
it's
Pedro
actually the
Pascal,
Golden Knight mascot.
Pedro Pascal
Pedro,
technically
Pedro,
plays
not
them,
Pablo.
But there's a lot of scenes where he has the helmet on. Yeah. That, like, he does not actually film. There's a guy in the suit, and he just voices
He's
him.
Got a double?
Yeah. It's a really sweet gig.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I like that guy. That guy's good. He's a good actor. All right, is this guy a Washington National? Almost said Wizard. Is he a Washington National or a Washington Bullet? So that
he
is a
hint.
He
played at some point for
that
the Washington Bullets.
He played for the Bullets. He's either a National or he is a Bullet. Hey. And Sean, you can play along here too. Joe Pace, Hunter Harvey. One of them's a Wizard, or one of them's a Bullet. One of them's a National. Current National.
Sean, I'll try to state the first stab at the first one. I'll say Joe Pace is a Bullet.
And then, yeah, Pace, Bullet, Harvey, National.
Well done. Joe Pace is a Bullet. He averaged 9 minutes back in the late 70s, played in 49 games. Hunter Harvey's pitched in 26 games for the Nats with a 3.31 ERA. All right, Phil Walker or Mason Thompson? Which one is the National? Which one is the Bullet?
Phil Walker's a Bullet.
Yeah, Mason Thompson's a baseball name. So
well done. Well done, guys. Y'all are good with the Washington.
His first name's Mason. There's no way he played basketball in the 80s.
Pretty good 70s. Point. Pretty fair point.
Walker averaged, there's a lot to peel off that. Walker averaged 10 minutes. He played in 40 games. Mason Thompson is currently pitched in 25 games this year with a 4.22 ERA.
So they've only played one game difference between their careers. Well done, I think. Well, for the National, you got more work to do.
What?
The fact that you had a guy that's been done for some odd years and his whole career was summed up in 25 games?
Well, this was one particular season. All right, Dominic Smith or Charles Johnson?
Well, Dominic Smith's the ex-Met, right? So he was definitely he's definitely the National.
And the other guy's the Bullet.
Yeah.
Look
well
at
done,
you.
Sean.
Look
way
at
to
you.
Pick up the pieces and these down. Throw it down.
These down. You are much better at this game whenever Sean's here and Joe is not.
Well, write that down.
All three of those guys were on the 1977-78 Washington Bullet team that won its only NBA
Finals. Your
boy
was on that team.
It was. You know who else was on
the
that
Big
team?
E.
The Big
Wes
E.
Wes Unseld.
That's right.
Yep.
That's a pretty good little duo there. That's why
Kevin
Joe
Greavy.
Pace. Who?
Kevin Greavy.
You know who else was on that team? I didn't realize.
World Be Free.
No, World Be Free, I don't think was. Greavy was.
Phil Chenier.
The one that surprised me was Mitch Kupchak.
Oh, yeah.
He was a rookie. He was in his second year on that team. I didn't realize Kupchak was on that team.
Was Phil Chenier on that team?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He spelled it with a C, not an S.
C-H-E.
Yep. He was on that team, too. A pretty good duo. Elvin Hayes, Wes Unseld.
Bobby Dandridge?
Yep. Yep.
Former
well done.
Buck.
You know where he went to school?
Bobby Dandridge, the Greyhound. His nickname was the Greyhound.
He went
great
to
years for the
Norfolk
Bucks.
State.
Ooh, never would have gotten.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. Well done, though. You got all three right. You know, Elvin and Wes Unseld, the reason that Joe Pace, Phil Walker, and Charles Johnson have an NBA championship.
So it's the coach of that team?
Was coach of that team
Kevin
was, nope, nope.
Oh, Gene Shue.
Nope.
Dick Motta.
Yep. Yeah, that team only won 44 games that year.
Wow.
Went on to win the NBA Finals. Yeah.
And that was the year they went, they and the Sonics each won one. They played each other in the finals 2 years in a row.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was that Lenny Wilkins?
That was Lenny Wilkins with Gus Johnson and downtown Freddie Brown.
Gus Johnson?
Not that Gus
Johnson. What's the wheelhouse leading off with today, Sean Mapes?
Oh, I have no clue. J.J. Watt press conference. Lakers?
I've been hot on this, so I'm going to stick with this. They'll start with Astros and they'll roll. No. I'm sorry. No, they won't. Cody was at camp today. They're starting with Texans camp day one.
Kenyon Green was not there. Who the backup left guard is and how he's going to protect half of C.J. Stroud's blind side. All right, that does it for us. Thanks to Sean Mapes filling in for Joe George. He'll be here again tomorrow. He's Blank on Branham. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.